This is Free Thought Radio with co-hosts Dan Barker and Annie Laurie Gaylor. Irreverent views, news, music, and interviews.
Imagine there's no heaven. It's easy if you try. Sky. Imagine all the people living for today.
Hello, heathens near and far. I'm Annie Laurie Gaylor, and welcome to Free Thought Radio.
And I'm Dan Barker, your friendly neighborhood atheist of the airwaves. This is the December 8th, 2012 broadcast of our show. Free Thought Radio is produced and broadcast right here in Madison, Wisconsin. We podcast and broadcast in many other cities around the country, including Grand Rapids in Monterey, California, in Columbia, Missouri, Ithaca, New York, and other places that we have yet to hear about because some places where it is airing.
Free Thought Radio is the weekly production of the Freedom From Religion Foundation, and you may remember that FFRF is a nonprofit, spelled both ways, and we work to keep religion out of government, and we are a membership organization for like-minded people who are personally free from religion.
And how many members do we have so far?
Well, over 19,000.
Today, we're going to talk with Susan Jacoby. We've had her on the show before to talk about an earlier book. She's a journalist, an author, and she has a new book out now. It's a biography of Robert G. Ingersoll. It's called The Great Agnostic.
So that'll be fun to catch up with Susan. And as usual, there is a lot of news.
On All Things Considered this week on Monday on NPR, there was a story about our Montana lawsuit about the Jesus statue this is on the ski slope there in Montana on federal property that we are suing about. And a segment ran with our main plaintiff in the lawsuit. His name is William Cox.
He's our main member. He's not actually named as a plaintiff. He's just one of our many injured members in Montana there.
And because of him, our standing is secure to continue the lawsuit.
And we've been in the news because there was just a decision to that effect.
Let's listen to some of that interview that ran this past week on NPR.
If you get off Chairlift 2 at Whitefish Mountain Resort in Montana, you'll shuss by a life-size statue of Jesus wearing a light blue robe, his arms outstretched. It's known as the Big Mountain Jesus. It's been there since 1955, erected by the Roman Catholic organization the Knights of Columbus, and it stands on a small parcel of federal land. Last year, the U.S. Forest Service decided not to renew the statue's permit, but after a public outcry, the service allowed it to stay. Well, that in turn triggered a First Amendment lawsuit from the atheist and agnostic group, the Freedom From Religion Foundation, which argues the statue violates the principle of separation of church and state. They want the statue taken down. And now a federal judge in Montana has ruled that suit can go forward because Kalispell resident and longtime skier William Cox has been named as an injured party in the suit.
I've regarded this statue as an absurdity ever since the first time I saw it. It's just a kind of a bizarre thing to discover Jesus standing there in the snow. So I thought to myself, I think I'll join this organization. I'm no longer a person of faith. And subsequently, they contacted me and asked whether I would care to be a witness.
Mr. Cox, what's the constitutional issue as far as you're concerned?
Well, the First Amendment is the constitutional issue. It provides that Congress shall pass no law establishing religion, and by extension, that's been applied to the agencies authorized by Congress, of which the Forest Service is one. You know, we live today in a religiously diverse and multicultural society, and it's offensive to many people, some of whom I know intimately. My wife is Jewish, and it's worrisome to them that religion, particularly Christianity, plays such a prominent role in our political life. Often it appears to me to be a somewhat hypocritical role, and in any event, the Constitution provides that in essence, the federal government shall not establish religion. And this is a clearly religious shrine.
Let me ask you this. The statue, as I understand it, was put up 57 years ago, and originally it was meant to honor soldiers from the 10th Mountain Division who saw similar shrines when they were fighting in the mountains of Italy during World War II. They say, supporters say, it's a military memorial, not a religious shrine.
That may have been the history. I don't know of anyone around here who knew that before this controversy occurred. And it may well be that the soldiers encountered Christian monuments in Europe and in the mountains and found them to be comforting or inspiring, but that doesn't change our Constitution, I think. And this is, as a war memorial, really outrageous. I mean, when did Jesus bless war?
The permit for the Jesus statue on this mountain has been renewed many times before. Do you think there's some validity to folks who say, look, this is a part of our local culture, it's been here for a very long time, just let it stay?
Well, it is a part of the local culture. I think that's true, and some people regard it with a certain amount of nostalgia and might miss it if it's removed. Whether that's a valid legal argument or not, I'm going to leave to the judge.
Well, Mr. Cox, thanks for talking with us today.
Thank you.
That's William Cox of Kalispell, Montana, who objects to the Big Mountain Jesus statue.
That was our FFRF member, William Cox, who has skied past this Jesus statue put up by the Knights of Columbus on federal land for his whole life and has been offended by it. And he was being interviewed by Melissa Block on All Things Considered last Monday about FFRF's lawsuit against this Jesus shrine on federal property.
Now, another FFRF member, his name is John Wolf, who lives in Columbia, Pennsylvania, complained about a Cajun restaurant that was giving special benefits to believers who brought in a church bulletin. They got a 10% off. Here's just a little bit of a story that ran on Huffington Post about the Prudhomme Cajun Kitchen.
Well, all-inclusive, that's now the policy at Prudhomme's Lost Cajun Kitchen after a dispute over discounts. In July, a Manheim Township man filed a complaint with the Pennsylvania Human Relations Commission about a discount to give 10% off the price of a meal if patrons brought in a church bulletin. As an atheist, he saw it as discriminatory. Well, the Human Relations Commission has now decided to dismiss the complaint as both sides settled on changing the way the discount was worded. That discount remains in place, open to any kind of believer or non-believer with proof of their organization.
So in other words, you can take in your copy of Free Thought Today, FFRF's newspaper, anything else that shows that you have an opinion about religion, I guess. And so our congratulations to John Wolf, who had to go to a lot of trouble to get this Cajun Kitchen to obey the Civil Rights Act, which says you may not discriminate on the basis of religion, race, creed, and so on. And now what's coming up, Dan?
So in Miami, Florida, the Miami-Dade commissioners spent this last week an awful long time in one of their meetings debating an ordinance about the invocation before their meetings. Did we send a letter to them?
Yes, we did.
Complaining
Certainly
about
did.
That? Mm-hmm. So we're not quite sure. Apparently it was an 8-3 vote to keep the invocation, but we think there were so many amendments that it watered it down.
Yeah, they weren't. The minutes were not yet posted online, so it's still a little murky exactly what happened.
But there were, most of the commissioners wanted to keep the invocation and the prayer, but there were some very brave ones there who testified in front of everyone that it was unconstitutional. Here's Miami Commissioner Sally Heyman. She gave an eloquent 10-minute speech, but here's about a minute of what she said.
We're supposed to represent the entire community with people of all differing religious views. Our country is specifically founded so that citizens would not be subjected by their government to a religious message of any kind. Some members of our community are atheists or agnostic and should not be forced to participate in a hearing of a message anywhere in a country in which religion and government are supposed to be separate. Thomas Jefferson, who was a man of deep religious conviction, wrote that the purpose of the First Amendment was to build a wall of separation between church and state. Today's action threatens to erode that wall. This proposal is unnecessary. It exposes us to litigation, and it may well be unconstitutional. I have no choice but to vote against this.
That was Sally Heyman. Another commissioner there in Miami, Javier Suarez is his name. He's actually a believer and he likes prayer, but he doesn't think it's appropriate at an official secular meeting. Here's a couple of his remarks.
There's no way I can vote for something that involves selecting one religion or another, one particular minister versus another, or priest or rabbi, and then having to go through it's just, I just don't see it.
Well, even to get two commissioners in a city or a county to speak up this eloquently.
There were three, actually.
The principle of separation of church and state. And also what it feels like to be in the minority when the government is forcing a religion on you. This is a change, and it's going to take a lot of education. It's a lot of persistence. Those of us who know that the government does not have the right in this country to extort prayer by citizens have to continue to speak up. And
now this is a little bit of Hector Berlioz music. Hector Berlioz was born this week, well, actually in 1803, on December the 11th. Hector Berlioz was a thoroughly non-religious, free-thinking classical composer. Listen for more of his music during the rest of today's show. I'm Dan Barker, here with Annie Laurie Gaylor, and stay tuned for more Free Thought Radio.
Ask for a sample issue of Free Thought today and find out more about the Freedom From Religion Foundation at ffrf.org or phone 1-800-335-4021. This is Free Thought Radio.
I'm Dan Barker.
I'm Annie Laurie Gaylor, and we are co-presidents of the Freedom From Religion Foundation, and we hope not someday, but today, you will join FFRF at ffrf.org. And we're going to talk about a major violation occurring today, which is a proclamation, an inappropriate proclamation by a governor. But first, I want a little update on all the seasonal violations that FFRF is dealing with. We have protest banners, equal opportunity winter solstice signs going up in a number of locations around the country. And we'll have updates about that next week, where there are nativity displays on public property. And we also have a complaint going out over a lighted cross on top of a police station in Texas. And that's also a seasonal violation. So we'll have more updates about all of that.
Is that the penalty for criminals? They get hung on that cross?
I don't know. but so then today is actually been proclaimed inappropriately a day of prayer and repentance by the Catholic governor of Kansas, Sam Brownback. And you may recall that he came to the support of Rick Perry last summer.
The governor of Texas, when he was running a candidacy for the nomination for president, I think he was the only other governor who got behind Perry, wasn't he?
Well, this was before he announced his candidacy, and Perry issued a day of prayer, and he hosted it, and he organized it, and it was up at his website, and it was an enormous violation.
Which we complained about and
sued over. And then we had a non-prayer dinner there. And so Sam Brownback had promised to do his own kind of thing. And so now he is today. And FFRF has written a letter of complaint and asked members to join in with an action alert. But here is a commercial, a web commercial that the Kansas governor did for, what's it called? Rain Down America?
Rain Down, not R-A-I-N, but Rain Down. And he did this commercial as governor from his own governor's house.
And he's talking about his proclamation.
Hello, I'm Governor Sam Brownback, and I want to invite you to join with me and thousands of people from all over America on December 8th to pray to God in humility and in unity to ask for His favor and assistance in these difficult times. Leaders throughout American history have always looked to the Lord during difficult times and asked for favor and help. George Washington did. Benjamin Franklin did. Abraham Lincoln, 1863, says, "We've been favored like no nation in the history of mankind, and yet we've forgotten God." Those words ring in my mind because I think that's where we are today. We've been favored like no nation in history, and yet too often we've forgotten God. And the people of faith need to be salt and light in difficult times like we're in right now. So join us December 8th, in humility, not pointing fingers at anybody, except ourselves, asking for repentance, asking in humility to be used as salt and light in a difficult season for the United States and for our state. I hope you can be here.
Okay, enough. Repent yourself, Governor Brownback, for entangling religion and government. We're going to point the finger at you.
And did you catch that salt and light reference? That's from Jesus' Sermon on the Mount. You are the salt of the earth and the light of the world.
Now, Dan, you have the perfect rebuttal, and you can go to our website, ffrf.org/news. Look for our news release about this, and we do rebut this. But you wrote that song to protest Governor Perry doing something similar.
Last year.
Called
Get Off Your Knees and Get to Work. And this is a sneak preview. The song was just recorded and mixed this week to go on the new FFRF album called Adrift on a Star. And it's very appropriate to what Governor Perry and Governor Brownback are doing. Listen to this new song. It's called Get Off Your Knees and Get to Work.
This song is dedicated to Governor Rip Van Periwinkle, who overslept not 30, but 2,030 years. If you find yourself to be a resident of the Capitol or of the City Hall, as governor or mayor or as president, you're a public servant to us all. You were not elected as our pastor in chief, and preaching on the job is not a perk. Govern us with reason and not belief. Get off your knees and get to work. Get off your knees and start thinking. The answers will be found right here on earth. Unbow your head and open your eyes. Get off your knees and get to work. It makes no actual difference what you say to God. He may as well be Santa or an elf. Every time you bow your head and pray to God, you are only talking to yourself. If you run your office with sobriety, your First Amendment duties you won't shirk. Everyone is tired of your piety. Get off your knees and get to work. Get off your knees and start thinking. The answers will be found right here on earth. Unbow your head and open your eyes. Get off your knees and get to work. Faith won't fix the budget. Prayer won't pay the bill. Hope will never nudge it. But taxing churches will. Get off your knees and start thinking. The answers will be found right here on earth. Unbow your head and open your eyes. Get off your knees and get to work. Get off those knees and get to work. Get off your knees and get to work.
Okay, that was tailor-made for Sam Brownback, who's today proclaimed a day of prayer and repentance in Kansas, very inappropriately using his official capacity as governor.
And what are the things going to happen? They're all going to pray and something supernatural. Like last year when Governor Perry of Texas had a day to pray for rain, and then the whole state caught fire, you know, and they didn't say, oh, well, God failed us.
So that's performed by you, Dan. It's the new CD.
It's from the new CD.
Adrift on a Star, which should be available in a week or two.
Very, very soon. We're getting ready to do the mastering. So.
Including Poor Little Me, the song that you co-wrote with Charles Strauss of Annie fame. And lots of some cameos.
And a lot of Yip Harburg lyrics. Shelley Siegel of Australia. Joe Taylor, the former Christian rocker, has contributed a song. Susan Hofer is singing a lot of it. It's going to be an exciting new project, new CD.
And if you've got an order, it's on back order. It will be filled before the winter solstice. And it's called Adrift on a Star, Yip Harburg tunes. And who are we listening to?
This is Berlioz, Symphonie Fantastique. I'm Dan Barker here with Annie Laurie Gaylor. Stay tuned for more Free Thought Radio.
The things that you're liable to read in the Bible, it ain't necessarily so. This is Free Thought Radio.
I'm Dan Barker.
I'm Annie Laurie Gaylor.
And we have on the phone with us a journalist and author, Susan Jacoby. We've had her on the show before two or three years ago about another one of her books. She has 10 books, including some national best-selling books. One of them is called Free Thinkers, A History of American Secularism. And then the New York Times bestseller, The Age of American Unreason, which we interviewed Susan about back, I think, in 2008 or 9, a book called Alger Hiss and the Battle for History. Susan Jacoby began writing at the Washington Post, her career at the Washington Post, and she's contributed to a lot of newspapers and national magazines. She's received a lot of grants and fellowships from the Guggenheim Foundation, the National Endowment for the Humanities, and the Coleman Center for Scholars and Writers of the New York Public Library, where she lives.
She doesn't live at the library.
sometimes I think I do.
Well, it's a beautiful library.
It is.
Well, welcome back to Free Thought Radio.
Thank you. I'm happy to be back.
Now, you did write a history already that Dan referred to, the Freethinkers, A History of American Secularism, back in 2004. Is that what got you interested in knowing more about Robert Ingersoll?
Well, actually, because that was a comprehensive history of American secularism, and Ingersoll, who was known as the great agnostic in the last quarter of the 19th century, was a very important figure in that. Nevertheless, I couldn't write all about him. I wanted to. And an awful lot of readers of that book asked me, they said, why don't you do something more on Robert Ingersoll? I'd like to do more about him. And the opportunity came along. The Yale University Press has this thing called American Icon Series. And by the way, the book is actually not in the stores until January, and it's available for pre-order on Amazon.
So
now
you can do your non-Christmas shopping and pre-order if you want.
Really. But Ingersoll is really a figure for our time. First of all, he was a Republican, interestingly enough.
Yes.
And that amazes people. And he was an important mover and shaker and dealer in American politics, really from 1875 until his death in 1899. However, while American presidential candidates in his party were really happy to have his endorsement because he was so famous as an orator, His agnosticism, and really, he also, one of the things he said, which is so true, is he was asked by a reporter, what's the difference between an agnostic and an atheist? And he said there isn't, because he said it's a myth that the atheist said he knows there is no God. Nobody can prove a negative. All that atheists say is that given the evidence we have, we certainly don't think there's a God. And he said that's what the agnostic is. The agnostic is an atheist, and the atheist is an agnostic. But this prevented Ingersoll, who had political ambitions, from ever running for a national office. And in fact, the New York Times, in his obituary, said he might well have been president of the United States had it not been for his anti-religious views. And what's telling today is that would still be true of anyone like this today.
Well, there was a story about someone who came to visit his home and looked at his huge, extensive library and said to Ingersoll, you know, that must have cost you a lot. And didn't he say something like, Yes, this library cost me the presidency.
I've never heard that one.
I think it's in another little biography that we published about him.
But he began, really, before he became a national figure in the 1870s, when he was still a young anti-slavery Republican politician in Illinois. He also began talking against religion, and that really sealed his fate. Now, he was an extremely successful lawyer. He didn't suffer financially, which really, it drove people crazy, just like it does when an atheist has a bestseller, an occasional bestseller compared with all of the evangelical Christian literature out there. When an atheist, it drives people crazy if an atheist can actually make money talking about his views. And Ingersoll did.
Well, now, I don't know if we gave the title of your book that's coming up. It's The Great Agnostic, Robert Ingersoll in American Free Thought, and we're talking with Susan Jacoby.
And there's a lot of endorsements for your book. Frederick Cruz from UC Berkeley, Alan Wolfe, Rebecca Neuberger Goldstein, Adam Hochschild, a lot of glowing praise for this new book about Robert Ingersoll, the great agnostic. He was like super famous. Today, most people don't realize that. We've sort of forgotten about him.
He was as famous as any celebrity in America you can name today. For one thing, he crossed the country. He traveled. He gave lectures. He lectured in every state except three. You can guess what two of them were, Mississippi and Alabama.
Oh, really?
But he did two things. One, I think it's important for your listeners, he helped revive the historical reputation of Thomas Paine, which really, except among marginalized freethinkers, was in the dustbin at that point.
Isn't that terrible that would be true?
And if it hadn't been for Ingersoll, who talked about Paine all over the country, Paine would be less known today than he is. That was one thing he did. The second thing he did, of course, he talked constantly about separation of church and state, but the second thing he did was he was a real popularizer, a real explainer of Darwin's theory of evolution. In a way, he could reach people in a way that scientists couldn't. He could put it in terms that people could understand. Like one of his great lines from his lecture on evolution was when he first read that book by Darwin, he said his first thought was how bad the nobility of the old world is going to feel upon learning that it's descended from the prince orangutan and the princess chimpanzee.
He had a great sense of humor.
And in this way, he was able to explain things to people in ways that, like Thomas Henry Huxley, of course, was great scientific popularizer of Darwin's theory of evolution. But Ingersoll spoke in a way that could reach people who didn't have a lot of education.
Now, he drew crowds, tens of thousands of people, in an era without microphones in some cases.
And air conditioning.
Not tens of thousands.
Well,
thousands.
I thought it was, I think more than that in Chicago once. I don't know how they heard him.
That actually was not an agnostic lecture. That was a lecture in support of Rutherford B. Hayes during the Republican political campaign.
Oh, the feathered peacock or something, that endorsement for the nomination that he gave.
Yeah, right? Ingersoll really had two careers. And as time went on, the first one, which was he was going to be a mover and shaker in American politics, wasn't as important as the second one. But he did for example, Republicans were by far more sympathetic to free thought than Democrats were at the time, who were really, really pretty much the party of, William Jennings Bryan was a Democrat, mm-hmm. a party associated both with, in the past, with pro-slavery, and secondly, with much more affinity for very, very orthodox fundamentalist religion. Because another key thing that Ingersoll did was, this is the period when the split in American Protestantism appears, and the split comes over Darwin's theory of evolution. There are Protestants who try to reconcile this with their faith. Let's put it this way, they're the ancestors of today's mainstream Protestants, Unitarians and Episcopalians and mainstream Methodists and Northern Baptists, et cetera, then they're the fundamentalists who, because Darwin's theory of evolution can't in any universe be reconciled with a literal interpretation of the Bible, they reject it at all. And Ingersoll took advantage of this. He had a lot of friends among liberal Protestants. And in this way, and in fact, that also, it made the fundamentalists and the real Orthodox Protestants crazy. In this way, he made free thought more respectable, because even though he would be debating somebody like Henry Ward Beecher, still, you know, he established himself as being in the same universe of thought and debate as certain kinds of religious people, which was very important for the growth of the free thought movement at that time.
Ingersoll was a colonel in the Civil War when he was a young man, and he practiced law in, was it Peoria, Illinois, is that right?
That's right.
That's where he started off.
Right. He didn't grow up in Peoria, but Ingersoll's father was a Presbyterian minister. And he was an unsuccessful Presbyterian minister in that he never managed to keep a congregation. Hmm. So all through Ingersoll's childhood, he got booted out of one congregation after another. So, I mean, Ingersoll, when as a young man, he wound up in Illinois. And in a sense, he could be said, Ingersoll was born in 1833. But he, in many ways, his life paralleled Lincoln's, although his father, being a minister, was, of course, educated in what he was educated in. Ingersoll was self-educated. He didn't go to very many schools. He didn't go to one of the nation's few law schools. He became a lawyer just as Lincoln did, by reading the law in an older attorney's office in a small town in Illinois. So there are a lot of parallels there.
Did you, Susan, make any pilgrimages to Peoria or his birthplace?
Or New York or Dresden?
I live in New York. And in fact, here's a story you'll like, by the way. Ingersoll's Gramercy Park townhouse was torn down years ago and was replaced by a place called the Gramercy Park Hotel. The Center for Inquiry, which you know is a secular organization, got a plaque put up on the building saying this was where Robert Ingersoll lived from the late 1880s until his death, the great agnostic and so forth. Well, the Gramercy Park Hotel, which was a seedy old hotel, was bought out by a high-toned company about 10 years ago, and they insisted on having the plaque taken down because they didn't want any controversy around their business.
Wow. Well, we have that plaque somehow, we have one of them.
Well, we have, yeah, it's like a bronze plaque mm-hmm. from the building that we somehow ended up in our office.
that may have originally been ours, but it ought to be here in New York.
There was an extra
the place where he lived.
This
and
was...
I have been to Peoria, which does have a statue of him.
Oh, I saw that. It's right
yes.
by the river in Peoria.
Yeah. Yes.
And a nice statue.
Now, I don't know. He had some lovely mansions, didn't he? And I don't think those were preserved, probably.
No, but the home he had in New York, the townhouse he had in New York, was really nice. It was right across the park from Edwin Booth, the actor who was a friend of his, who was anti-slavery and whose brother was John Wilkes Booth, of course, Lincoln's assassin.
Well, we'll come back and talk a little bit more maybe about Ingersoll the Man. With
yep.
Susan Jacoby, her upcoming book, The Great Agnostic, Robert Ingersoll and American Freethought. I'm Annie Laurie Geller.
And I'm Dan Barker.
And
stay tuned.
A little more Berlioz, right?
This is some more Berlioz, one of his symphonies. I'm Dan Barker. Stay tuned for more Freethought Radio.
As Mark Twain said, faith is believing what you know ain't so. This is Free Thought Radio.
I'm Dan Barker.
I'm Annie Laurie Geller, and our guest today is author and journalist Susan Jacoby. She has a new book coming out at the beginning of the year celebrating Robert Greene Ingersoll. And we've been talking about some of his accomplishments. And the
title of the book is The Great Agnostic.
And Susan, during the break, you said, let's talk about his ideas. So let's do that.
Okay, this is really important. One of the things I emphasize, and as I said, this is a little biography. The format of this is 40,000 words. But one of the things I emphasize is some of the ways in which Ingersoll was ahead of his time, even for freethinkers. And I will tell you, he was, if there ever was the first male feminist in this country, the first drenched American-born feminist, it was Robert Ingersoll. When he talked about labor, for instance, he made a point that was almost unthinkable in the 1880s, which is that the worst paid workers were women. He was talking about the way in which women were held to standards of sexual morality that men weren't. And this was a free thought cause. But Ingersoll made the link with economics, you know, saying that working men didn't regard women as their sisters in labor the way they ought to, and that the fact that women couldn't earn a decent living was one of the reasons they fell, and the only way they could make a living was to be a prostitute. These are points that are really worth the reiteration today. Ingersoll said, at a time when there were no reliable means of contraception, he said the key to woman's freedom was that she be the owner of her own body, and that she alone be able to decide how many children to have and whether to have children, and not be dependent on the indulgence of a man.
Well, he certainly
These were revolutionary ideas at that time.
And he certainly was a great friend of people like Elizabeth Cady Stanton, the feminists of his era.
He was, and they... And there were many tributes to him from those women, mm-hmm. but there was one way in which he was different from people like Elizabeth Cady Stanton and a number of male free thinkers in this. Unlike them, there is a blot on the free thought movement, and free thinkers don't like to think about it today, which is that an awful lot of the educated free thinkers of that day, including Elizabeth Cady Stanton, thought that immigrants were by nature inferior. They thought that blacks were by nature inferior. They had been abolitionist and anti-slavery, but when Congress gave the vote to African-American men and not to women of every color, Elizabeth Cady Stanton became very bitter, and she said, you know, imagine Sambo and Young Tongue being able to vote, and, you know, women like Susan B. Anthony not being able to vote. And in general, a lot of freethinkers subscribe to social Darwinism, which basically believed in the inferior potential of huge numbers of people. Ingersoll did not agree with them, even though some of them were his friends, just like some religious people were his friends. He believed that the only difference between these people and you know, nice, rich, white people in America was education. And he said so over and over. He was one of the few people in either party to speak out against an infamous Supreme Court decision in 1883, which nullified the Civil Rights Act of 1875, which was basically like the Public Accommodations Act of 1964, gave blacks the right to ride on trains like whites. And this is important about Ingersoll because he showed what free thought and atheism could be in terms of social action in a way that not everybody did.
And he was a very loving family man as well. He had strong, you might even say conservative family values, even though he was...
He did absolutely. On the one hand, he believed in equality for women. On the other hand, he was very paternalistic. And yet, the dedication of the first volume of his collected works, which were all published in 1900 after his death, is to Eva Parker Ingersoll, my wife, a woman without superstition.
And that sounds familiar.
isn't that a great... And the dedication of his second volume is to his sister-in-law, whom he said, my editor and friend. These are not usual kinds of dedications to women in this era either, and they show what his attitude was. He was consistent in basically the idea that human rights are indivisible. And let me leave you with one thought, which I just learned while writing this book. He was also an anti-vivisectionist, which is a joke word in America today. But in fact, what vivisection meant was people torturing animals in the name of medical research, live animals, to see how much pain they could stand. Ingersoll, he risked the anger of some of his scientific friends. He stood up and said, this is nonsense. There's nothing you can learn other than how much pain a living being can stand from torturing an animal. And here's something he's saying in 1891. He's saying, mark my words, people who will torture living animals will torture living men for the same purpose. And it's true. And it's so, he was so prescient in so many ways. And he took a hit from some of his scientist friends for that, who quite wrongly, and this lasted well into the 20th century, the dissection of live animals to see if you could learn something about how much it hurt them to dissect them. Steven Pinker, in fact, has said that when he was a psychology student, he was still, this would have been in the 1970s, he was asked to dissect a living rabbit, and he did it, and he said it's the thing he's done in his life that he's most ashamed of. Well, Ingersoll saw what this was in 1891, and he said so.
Now, we were talking about how he was a huge celebrity in his day, and when you read biographies or autobiographies of many of the other famous people of the era and progressives and doers and shakers, it's very common to run into reminiscences about Ingersoll, you know,
they
like
all
Mark
knew
Twain.
Ingersoll. He was a friend of Mark Twain. He was a friend of Eugene V. Debs, even though he was a Republican.
Robert La Follette from Wisconsin.
He was a friend of Bob La Follette, who said that Ingersoll had had the most profound influence on his thinking about social problems. I have no doubt, by the way, that had Ingersoll lived into the 20th century, he would have been part of the progressive movement. He
and
would
Margaret,
have been a bull booster.
Margaret Sanger, too?
Stayed a conventional Republican.
Well, Margaret Sanger,
when
as a child, remembered seeing him when he'd been locked out of a church, and she said, we went to the cathedral in the woods because
yeah,
the
Margaret
priest
should listen to what he had to say about immigrants and learned from him.
Well, she helped a lot of poor women in her day. Now, we are talking with Susan Jacoby about her book that will be out in early January called The Great Agnostic, Robert Ingersoll and American Freethought. This is just a taste, but you can pre-order it at Amazon, is that right?
Yeah.
Or your favorite bookstore. So thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you very much. And thank you for the work you're continuing to do.
Nice to talk with you. We also want to thank Dave McCann, who is our engineer and producer of the show. Learn more about our show and the podcast at ffrf.org/radio.
Ask for more information at ffrf.org. You can phone 1-800-335-4021, or better yet, you have enough information. Join us at ffrf.org and become a supporter of our national group working to keep religion out of government and promote non-theism. Get a sample of our new paper. Tune in next week for Rational Radio and Blasphemous Broadcast.
Free Thought Radio is a production of the Freedom From Religion Foundation, FFRF.org. Irreverent views, news, music, and interviews brought to you by Annie Laurie Gaylor and Dan Barker.
I hope someday.